Welcome, everyone. I'm Mike.
I'm Ruben.
I'm Michelle.
And I'm Ben. And we're the hosts of the Four True Crime Idiots podcast.
How is everyone?
Good.
I'm good.
Doing great.
Are you ready for the show?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm ready.
What case are we covering?
The Icebox Murders.
Wait.
Is this
that
the
was
one?
That was a weird.
That was just like.
Jesus. It's hot outside.
Yes. Again. It's hot again. Welcome to South Texas.
Then you got your weird ass rain that wants to come in every now and then.
Yep. But we need rain.
We do. We haven't had rain in a while. When was the last time it rained?
March.
A couple of weeks ago.
No, April. It rained in April.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, now let's move on to the Idiot Criminal Club.
Welcome to the Four True Crime Idiots podcast, Idiot Criminals Club. Here is today's Idiot Criminal Club inductee. Take it away, Mike.
Woman allegedly made bomb threats to get boyfriend off work. By Rob Quinn, News or Staff. Posted September 27, 2021. A Maine woman who wanted to spend more time with her boyfriend came up with an incredibly stupid plan to get him off work, police say. Kayla Blake, age 33, allegedly called in two bomb threats to her beau's workplace. The Portland Press Herald reports officials say the threats to a Puritan medical products plant in Pittsfield, which produces swabs for COVID tests, resulted in the evacuation of around 400 employees from both the company's plants in the town and the loss of a full day of production. She has been charged with a felony count of terrorizing. Police say Blake, a Netna resident, called state police at 9 a.m. Thursday and said there was a bomb at the plant. Police say Blake, a Netna resident, called state police at 9 a.m. Thursday and said there was a bomb at the plant. She allegedly called again 2 hours later and said she was going to plant four pipe bombs near the plant. Fox reports. Pittsfield Police Chief Harold Bickmore says the call was traced to Edna and deputies found Blake after speaking to area residents. He says she admitted making the calls and said there were no bombs. She was arrested around 6 p.m. Thursday and bail was set at $1,500. Bickmore says the investigation involved several agencies including the FBI. The Chicago woman allegedly made a bomb threat after arriving late for her flight home from Florida. Well,
just to get her boyfriend off work.
Oh my god, there's other ways to do it, right?
Yeah, call the boss.
Call it.
Hey, can I leave money?
Hey, there's an emergency, he needs to leave.
I'm surprised it was just a $1,500 fine.
Right? Jeez.
Terrorist threats.
Well, yeah.
That's funny.
I wonder what her boyfriend thought, though. I wonder if he's, I'm pretty sure he's embarrassed, right? But like, I wonder what he told her afterwards, like when he went to go visit her in jail. What the hell's wrong with you?
You could have just asked me.
You told me to.
You could have just said there was an emergency.
Let me make bomb threats.
Probably got fired.
Bomb threats.
Fire him.
I mean, damn.
Fire? Well, it's not his fault.
Oh yeah, it's not his fault.
Wait, did she get fired? I wonder if she got fired. Did she get fired from work? Did it say?
I'm not sure.
I don't think she worked there.
Yeah, she didn't work there.
Oh, she didn't work there. But I'm just saying, like, wherever she worked.
She really wanted to spend time with him.
Well, I'm saying. Okay, but he worked at a medical products plant.
Yeah, where they made the COVID test.
Oh my god. She could have just been like, hey, come on, come back home.
There's Michelle whispering again.
I'm sorry.
There's Michelle whispering again.
You can still hear me. You can still hear me.
And the team was still low.
Well, she said it even lower.
Because you can hear me when I'm that close.
Yeah, that is true.
You can still hear me when I'm like right here. Look, right there.
See, now the spikes are good.
Oh my god. Anyway. Well, out of all the stupid ones I've ever read, this one has to be the most stupidest
one.
That was pretty stupid. She could have just called in an emergency.
But, like, did she come up with the idea on her own, or did some stupid, friend of hers helped her out, too? Like, why don't you call in a bomb threat, girl? Right. He has to be out early.
Right.
But, like, how does a person sit down and just think about, so, you know what? I want my babe here. There's no other way to do it, so I'm going to call a bomb threat.
Yes. Nobody in the right mind would do that.
Oh my god, it's so dumb.
Don't you know you can get in trouble for that?
Well, you think? Why would she think she wouldn't? Because she thinks that maybe. She
didn't even retrace her call?
Not only that, but like, well, yeah, like, trace her call, but She probably thought, like, they're going to see there's no bomb and I'm going to be okay.
I wonder if it's a small town and the guy answering recognized her voice.
Hey, your girlfriend's over here making bomb threats, dude. Go spend time with her. Go tell the boss you gotta leave early. Tell her to stop making... I wonder what her family thought. I guess it wasn't her husband or anything. That was a boyfriend, right?
I'm pretty sure they were mad at first.
For a good while, she's going to walk into the room and they're just going to shake their head. Don't let this one out. She's going to make bomb threats and nothing's going her way, man. She's late for work. So then another lady worked in Chicago. Okay, so another lady in Chicago did the same thing.
Yeah, with the airline, I think.
But with the airline after arriving late for her flight home from Florida. Oh my God.
Bum, bum, bum.
Especially
bum,
on bum, a plane. In an airport area.
Right.
Oh my gosh, that's too dumb.
Okay, now that we had our laugh for the day, let's move on to the case.
Okay, let's talk about the Icebox murder.
On June 23rd, 1965, two Houston police officers forced their way into the home of Fred and Edwina Rogers after Edwina's nephew Marvin reported that his phone calls to his aunt had gone unanswered for days. Upon entering the home, police found nothing unusual but noticed food sitting on the dining room table. One officer opened the refrigerator and found what appeared to be numerous cuts of washed, unwrapped meat neatly stacked on the shelves. The officer, thinking it was meat from a butcher hog, began to close the door. But as the officer was closing the door, he noticed two human heads visible through the clear glass of the vegetable bin.
So they got decapitated and their heads were put in the refrigerator?
I don't know why I'm laughing. I'm sorry for laughing.
Oh my but that's God.
That sucks.
That's crazy.
But what? I wonder what made the cup open the fridge.
Well, that's weird, right? Were
you stupid?
Yeah.
Well, maybe because he saw that there was food sitting on the table, so maybe he was just.
So, but said that day I read that or heard that
he was thirsty.
He was thirsty. So he was looking for a beer or something.
Are you serious?
Well, that's what I heard.
Sixties, I guess. You know, but.
Yeah. No hope. Don't help if I do, don't mind if I do.
Don't mind if I do. No one's here. I don't see no one there. But hey, there's a reason why he got thirsty, right? Because if he had not gotten thirsty, he would not have seen the head there.
True. That's true.
Good job getting thirsty, guy.
All right. We forgive you, officer,
Snoopy,
for being all snooper, but all right.
So that, well, I wonder if the meat was ham or was it?
Maybe. The human because flesh. He had thought that it was butcher meat. Well, I guess we're going to find out.
He thought it was hog meat. Wound up being...
So was it human meat?
I don't know.
I was assuming it was the human meat.
The heads were those of Fred and Edwina Rogers. What the officer initially thought was unwrapped cuts of hog meat were the couple's dismembered limbs and torso.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Ew, dude.
It's gross.
And they put it in the fridge to make it last. Like,
yeah.
They're real smart. What happened to all the mess?
Apparently, if the body's cold, they try to tell them, like, when they died.
Oh. But there was no mess there, like, when they walked, like, blood splatters?
Well, you'll see.
Okay.
Police later discovered the couple's organs in a nearby sewer, while other remains were never found. How did they get them in the sewer?
Flush them down the toilet,
oh,
I guess.
Right here.
I guess
the organs had been removed, cut up, and flushed down the toilet. Ew.
That's gross. Ew.
Man, but you know what, though? I mean, that's one sick dude. Was he trained to? Was he before Ed Gein, right? Because Ed Gein was back in the 50s.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
When he started?
Yeah.
So was he trying to be like him, minus the whole wearing the, making stuff out of the humans? We gotta touch that, guys.
Eventually. But, like, it's funny how he had time to flush him down the toilet.
He had time to flush it down the toilet. I mean, he had time to clean up.
Yeah.
Some organs, too, are kind of big. Like, he still had to chop them up, too.
Yeah.
So he had a lot of time.
He had a lot of time on his hands, obviously. But, like, what possesses a person? Like, what's going through a person's mind when they're going through all
that?
Just to be like, nonchalant about it. Just be like, you know what, I'm gonna cut them up, chop off their heads, remove those organs, and just flush those babies down the toilet.
Yeah, to their parents? That's messed up.
Yeah. Police determined that Fred and Wino Rogers had been killed on June 20th, Father's Day.
Father's Day?
Wow.
That sucks.
No reason for that. An autopsy showed that Fred was bludgeoned to death with a claw hammer. His eyes had been gouged out, and his genitalia were removed.
What was the purpose of removing the genitalia?
I don't know.
He must have really had a hatred.
Yeah, I think it was hatred.
Who knew what was going on there? Crazy.
Yeah.
Edwina had been beaten and shot execution style in the head. Police further said that the bodies were dismembered in the upstairs bathroom by a person with some knowledge of anatomy.
So he knew what he was doing?
Yeah.
You would have to.
I guess.
You would have to, I mean.
Yeah.
Or someone who studied it, maybe doesn't, well, and he doesn't have to be like pre-med or anything, but just maybe just studied it, just for S&Gs, because there's just, you know, people who.
That's gross. Yeah.
Takes a different kind of person to dismember somebody.
Oh, I'm just, what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be in that whole.
Mindset
to like, where you just like totally black out that you're
rage.
Just, yeah, like rage mode that you don't.
He said that's a bit red.
Until like afterwards, we start getting all panicky because, you know, wow.
There was little blood in the house and it appeared it had been thoroughly cleaned after the murders. What little blood was found led to Fred and Wina's 43-year-old son, Charles Rogers' bedroom. There, police found a blood-stained keyhole saw, but no trace of Rogers himself. And that's where we start getting into
the suspect.
Only suspect they probably had.
What's a keyhole saw? What does it look like?
Yeah, what is a keyhole saw?
I have no idea.
So that had to be what was used to decapitate them? And how was there not, like, a lot of blood? Ew, maybe you put them, like, on tarp and did it all
maybe
that.
The bathtub?
Yeah, okay. I wonder if they did that luminol. Oh, but they didn't have it back in the day. That
was that back then?
He also had cleaned.
What does it look like?
Oh, it's like a little knife saw.
Oh, so, yeah.
So that's what he used?
Yeah, that's what he probably used.
Wow.
Look at this. It's a small saw.
Do all that damage?
Yeah.
It had to be sharp, too.
Right.
Took his time. He had plenty of time.
Right. Too much time.
Way too much time. A search for Rogers was launched, and a warrant was issued for him as a material witness to the crime, but he was never found.
What?
So that's where we started getting it to.
He just vanished to this day?
Mm-hmm.
No one's nowhere his whereabouts?
No.
Nope.
He's probably somebody's uncle right now.
He was born in 1921. He's probably.
He was somebody's uncle. Yeah, he went down his grave with that secret. Oh, you know he changed his identity and all that.
Yeah, of course. Now we're going to talk about Charles Frederick Rogers a little bit more. He's a suspect.
Yep.
He's the only suspect, right?
Yes.
Charles Frederick Rogers was born on December 30th, 1921. Rogers enrolled at the Texas A&M University in 1942, but later dropped out. He then enrolled at the University of Houston, where he earned a bachelor of science degree in nuclear physics. Yeah, he was a pretty smart guy.
Yep.
Nuclear physicist.
Yep. He was almost a genius, I hear.
But he knew what he was doing then when he was putting up.
He's pretty smart.
Yeah. Wow.
During World War II, Rogers was a pilot in the United States Navy and also served in the Office of Naval Intelligence.
Wow. And that's why he was in intelligence.
Yeah.
Wow.
After the war, he worked as a seismologist for Shell Oil for 9 years. He abruptly quit his job in 1957 without giving an explanation. Probably a lot of money.
So he was probably making good money, too.
Yeah. He had a good job.
Jeez, he was smart. He was in intelligence. Well, in the naval intelligence, and he worked for Shell.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Something must have been off when you quit.
Yeah.
Friends and associates of Rogers later said that he was highly intelligent and had a talent for finding gas, oil, and gold for the companies for which he worked.
Yeah, it looks like he was smart.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, like, he wasn't a loner either because he had friends.
Ugh.
You know,
that is true, yeah.
He also spoke 7 languages and had an interest in ham radios.
They're like amateur radios.
Yeah.
What I've read.
Yeah.
What do? They were just like.
They're just like radios. You can just.
Regular radios.
Talk to different people.
Yeah. Kind of like a. What's it
kinda
called?
Like a walkie talkie, like on that frequency movie.
Okay, what are those called for the truckers?
Yeah. The
CBs.
Oh.
Maybe like that.
Breaker 1999.
It's a non commercial exchange ducky. Of messages.
Huh?
Rubber ducky.
Rubber ducky. Over and out, buddy.
So a lot of talk radio guys get, you know,
start. You got sorry on that.
Yeah.
So he liked to collect those, or what?
Ham radios.
Will he collect them, or he would just work on them?
Just mess with them and, I guess, use them.
Yeah, you could talk to different people, different frequencies. It's pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
In the mid-1950s, Rogers joined the Civil Air Patrol, where he reportedly met David Ferry, an alleged conspirator in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy.
Wow. What is the Civil Air Patrol?
I don't know. Never heard of that.
The Civil Air Patrol?
I don't even think it still exists. Like, well, I never heard of it.
Do civilians fly around planes looking for the Russians?
I guess so, back then.
I've never heard of that either.
Yeah, me.
Commies, you know. The Russians.
Damn commies.
I just don't know when y'all talk a little good talk. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
It's okay, though.
By 1965, Rogers was unemployed and living with his elderly parents in the Montrose neighborhood of Houston. Described as reclusive, Rogers was reported to have communicated with his parents by way of notes slipped under the door.
That's kind of weird.
Now he was smart, but he was getting, and now he was that weird snap smart. Yeah. Where there's,
he was, there, like, I heard it was his house.
That they were still.
Yeah, that was his house.
But they were there helping you out, bro, and supporting you.
Well, I think he was helping them out.
But he was unemployed, though.
But I think he probably had money from.
Oh.
He probably already had money.
Right?
Yeah.
Saved and stuff.
He found oil.
He wanted his peace and quiet.
But it's like, why invite him to live with you if you're just going to.
If they're going to know you.
Live like in a reclusive, like.
But did they ever go into details on how the living conditions were? Like how he was with them before
they,
he snapped?
They never really talked.
No?
They never saw each other.
Oh, right there. He just said.
That's the only way he would communicate.
I don't want to look at you.
And he would leave.
He would leave all day long. Yeah. He would leave early in the morning and be gone all day.
Wow.
And that's the only way he would communicate again.
Somewhere around there, something happened where he was just like.
After he quit his job, started a downward spiral.
Yeah.
Could be, and he's just.
Might have been okay, PTSD. Wait.
Was he always like that before he got was unemployed with them, though?
I don't know. Like, weird like that?
Yeah. Maybe just being in the war, something snapped in him.
Maybe this annoyed him. Maybe his parents. Well, we read later. He didn't get along with his
dad, mom.
Both of them.
I didn't get both.
Oh, he didn't get along with both?
Yeah. Apparently, he had like a younger sister that died, right?
Yeah.
How did she die?
Like in a car wreck, I think.
Did he plan that car wreck?
Some kind of accident.
Kind of sounds like someone who would plan something like that.
She died like in 1929.
Oh, wow. So that's when...
Yeah, wasn't she like 10 or something?
Yeah.
But growing up, did he show any signs of being kind of like, you know...
Weird?
Not all there, weird, but like... Yeah, it's you don't want to say weird.
I'm not weird.
But like... And you don't want to say not all there, but, you know, signs of him being like...
Mental health?
Yeah, like he had mental health problems.
But from what we read, he does seem normal until he quit his job.
Yeah.
So it's like after he quit his job is when he kind of like...
That's what I think.
But it's kind of like you quit your job, though. Why are you declining? You did not want to work there anymore.
Neighbors were unaware that Rogers lived with his parents as he generally left the home before dawn and did not return until after dark. So he was gone all day.
Yep.
I wonder what he was doing because he didn't work.
Yeah, it was. Hell,
being bars, a weirdo. Maybe he killed other people and they don't even know about it.
Well, maybe.
Because look how well he hid his parents' bodies in the fridge if it wasn't for that cop being thirsty.
Or the nephew for calling the cops.
Yeah.
Did the nephew ever talk about how his cousin was personally?
We haven't heard anything.
He was a weird one. I hate coming over to play with him.
He always took my toys.
like on the Halloween Kills when they go flashback to the cops being young. One of them was saying about how he was forced to play with Michael Myers when they were young. I would have been like, no.
I would not play with him.
He was just one.
He was just one.
I don't know. He just, after that job.
Oh, I'm surprised that there's no one out there to talk about how he was as a person.
Well, maybe they're here. I just haven't.
You know?
Yeah.
He just started keeping to himself. He became a recluse.
Yeah.
Not much is mentioned after that.
Yeah.
In 1975, a Houston judge declared Rogers legally dead so his estate could be probated.
What does that mean, probated?
Probate is a formal legal process that gives recognition to a will and appoints an executor or personal representative who will administer the estate.
So we just
gives it to whoever's
next of kin.
Yeah.
Hey, I wonder, like, a lot of those houses that you see that nobody's living in, but they don't have a for sale sign on there.
Mm-hmm.
If that's like something like that. Like, you know.
Oh, maybe.
Belongs to someone who passed and it belongs to the next of kin, but they don't want to. Hey, but you know, sell those houses. They're rundown houses. I'll take a house.
They're haunted.
Over a haunted house. I have a haunted apartment, guys.
I know.
The other day I was drying my shoes in the dryer.
Uh-huh.
You know how many times that door popped open on its own?
Maybe you didn't close it right.
I did. I slammed it. It won't start if I
don't close
it
right. Well, don't slam the door.
Well, I didn't slam it, but I closed it good.
I've been...
I know you stressed. Are. Stop it. But for reals, I think my house is haunted. My apartment's haunted.
It probably is.
I think it is.
You live with a ghost.
I probably do.
The case still remains officially unsolved, and Rogers remains the only suspect. Houston forensic accountant Hugh Gardiner and his wife Martha have continued to investigate the case and concluded that Rogers did murder his parents and was later killed in Honduras.
Okay, well, why over there in Honduras, though?
That's where he fled. Oh, why did they assume Honduras?
Yeah, why did they think he died over there in Honduras?
I'm not sure where they got their info from, but apparently he was killed by miners that he worked for.
Really?
Yeah. Not worked for, but I guess he was, like, in charge of them.
Yeah.
And they killed him.
Yeah. Hey.
Apparently, that's what they think.
Maybe he wasn't paying them?
Maybe. Now I don't know how they thought he went to Honduras. Any ideas, Ben?
Doesn't that have anything something to do with the Honduras doesn't do extradition?
True.
And that's what it was?
They don't extradite.
What does that mean?
Like,
they don't send you back.
Yeah, oh. Since he's wanted over here.
Oh.
And he's cut over there, they won't send him back.
Oh, so he is a smart little dude.
Well, they have dismissed John R. Craig and Philip A. Rogers' claim that Rogers was a CIA operative. Due to a lack of evidence, they admit that Rogers did have dealings with contract workers for the CIA when he worked as a seismologist.
And John R. Craig and Philip A. Rogers, they wrote another book?
They wrote a book about...
The Grassy Knoll.
Yeah.
The Man on the Grassy Knoll.
Yeah.
Okay. They read about him, too.
And well, yeah, right? We'll discuss that book a little bit later.
The Gardiners believe that Rogers planned the murder of his parents for years because his father was abusive and both parents were devious con artists. Ah, so they weren't...
They weren't, like, innocent.
Nope.
You see?
But, like, wonder what con artists, like, what cons do they do?
According to them, Fred worked as a bookie who regularly engaged in illegal activities such as gambling and fraud.
Oh.
Gambling. He was a bookie.
Yep.
Is it like a bookie where he goes beat up people if they don't have his money? Kind of bookie?
Maybe.
He just brought it home. You know how to leave it.
Yep.
Damn. Well, now I'm not saying it was okay what he did to his parents.
Oh, yeah.
But at least now we get a little bit of understanding as to why he did it to his parents.
Yeah.
Because, I mean...
According to them.
Yeah, according to them. And if they're doing it up to adulthood, can you imagine? Being like 40 and still being abused by your parents.
Mm-hmm.
At some point you have enough.
Huh?
To snap.
Swing a snap?
Yeah.
So enough's enough, man, you know?
Yes. Enough is enough.
Maybe that's why he quit his job and that's when he started planning.
To kill him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's a lot of planning, man.
He did have a lot of time on his hands.
Mm-hmm.
After quitting.
How many days before the nephew called? Like, was it like...
Oh, yeah, see, I don't know.
I forgot. It was a few days.
A few days?
Yeah.
Because I'm saying, because he planned it out pretty...
Yep. Maybe there wasn't any planning.
He just snapped and did it.
What the hell, yeah.
Wow.
They believe he continued abusing Charles into adulthood and began stealing large sums of money from him.
Oh, so they were taking money. Maybe that's why he quit.
Then why he snapped.
Right?
He got tired of taking his money.
Taking his money, abusing him.
Yep.
Yeah. So it was his house.
Yeah. It was actually his house that they were living in. He just invited them to live with him. I guess they were going through hardships.
Well, why?
Oh, yeah. Maybe.
But you think he wouldn't let them?
If he hated them, yeah. Not a good couple.
The Gardiners claim that after Rogers killed and dismembered his parents, he fled the U.S. for Mexico and was never found because he was aided by powerful friends he met through his ham radio hobby and while working for various oil and mining companies.
Yeah, connections.
He was smart.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
They have theorized that Rogers eventually made his way to Honduras, where he was killed over a wage dispute with miners.
Karma got him.
Karma.
Yeah.
And I are.
In October 2003, Redbud Publishing released The Icebox Murders, a novel written by the Gardiners. According to a review in the Houston Press, The Icebox Murders is written as a fact-based fiction and supposition.
A fact-based fiction?
Fact-based fiction.
That's kind of weird.
I don't understand that. There are many unnamed characters in the book, various politicians and attorneys, as well as the eyewitness who said he saw Rogers in Honduras after 1965.
I like your accent.
Right?
Honduras.
It's Honduras.
Mike and I's Mexican accent comes in every now and then.
Well, mine doesn't. Mine's terrible.
What about yours, Ben?
Honduras.
Oh, Ben got it.
Publishers Weekly also referred to the novel as fact-based fiction.
Now, what does that mean?
What is fact-based fiction?
A fiction that has...
have more facts in it than it does actual facts in there? Like, it's actual, like they know?
Oxymoron?
Or is it more of a, they're just going right by what people are saying? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just weird. Just a...
When you write a fact-based fiction, whether it is a picture book like this one or a novel, the first thing to remember is that you need to create a story that works. This may mean
to catch the audience's attention?
Adding, subtracting, or vastly altering characters.
No.
So you can't really...
You may also have...
You kind of have to take...
With a grain of salt.
Yeah, you kind of have to take their...
Yeah, their word for it. So it's either you believe it or not.
Because no one really knows what happened.
So they can mess with the characters. Right?
Yeah, they can say, like, well, he did this and he did that. Like, yeah. say, there's a little tidbit, like, oh, well, there is a witness saying that we saw him down, they saw him down the street at this time. Yeah. And they can, like, go with that story because they are like, okay, well, that's one fact check that's right.
Yeah.
So let's just make up other shit to make it look like, you know, interesting.
Like you said, take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. So, like, it could happen. It probably did. No one really knows.
But it might not.
It might not. Happened. Yeah.
Right.
And the only one who knows is the one person that no one can find.
Yep.
So he could be dead and he could not be dead.
Rogers, where are you?
Hey, look, I'm saying...
He's gone.
I'm saying he didn't get killed. I'm just saying they just never caught him.
Yeah.
I think he just went and lived a double life somewhere else.
I think so.
The house in which the murders took place was located at 1815 Driscoll Street. After the murders, the house remained empty and unsold. It was torn down in 1972. The lot remained empty until 2000 when condominiums were built on the lots.
I wonder if it's haunted. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say.
People bring that up a lot.
Yeah.
They do?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's haunted.
Why would you do that? It's like John Wayne Gacy's house, the old house.
Uh-huh.
They tore it down, but they put another one.
They built it?
Yeah, they built a new one, yeah.
I mean, look, I'm saying if I were to ever buy a house and the murder was committed there... Yeah. I would bless that house.
I don't know. I wouldn't move into it at all.
I would have a priest go in there and bless it. And then I would have a shaman go in there and bless it.
If I'm not mistaken, the whole neighborhood was turned into...
It's kind of like the Sharon Tate neighborhood.
Yep.
They're saying like the house itself is haunted, but like also like the neighborhood's haunted too.
So what are we going to talk about now?
Now it's the allegations of involvement in the assassination of JFK.
Rogers' life was documented in the 1992 book, The Man on the Grassy Knoll, by John R. Craig and Philip A. Rogers. According to this work, Rogers was a CIA agent who was postulated to have impersonated Lee Harvey Oswald in Mexico City, and along with Charles Harrelson, was one of the two shooters involved in the assassination of President Kennedy.
Fun fact, did you know Charles Harrelson?
I was about to tell you. I learned that myself.
Was Woody Harrelson's dad or is it Rudy?
Yeah.
Rudy. Yeah.
I just learned that myself.
Yeah. I was freaked out too when I heard about it. I was like, what?
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a mugshot of him.
The authors contend that Rogers, Harrelson, and Chauncey Holt were the three tramps arrested in Daly Plaza after the assassination, and that Rogers murdered his parents because his mother was tracking his mini telephone call.
Oh. the house light.
Well, you know how sometimes, right, like they have two lines and you pick it up and you could hear it? She probably did this. Remember, you used to mute it with that thing like this real quick. And it said,
Maybe he should go to a payphone?
Well, you would think that they would have some kind of like, you know, hey, don't call at home because you have people there. Well, yeah. Maybe at this right. block payphone number, there's going to be a red phone.
I'm not sure I like this theory.
I know, it's a weird theory. Maybe she was listening in?
Well, yeah, but if you had your suspicions, I mean, yeah, like you said, go use a payphone.
I know, it's easy.
He just wanted a reason to kill his parents.
I think he was just...
Yeah. I think he... I don't think, like, he was, like...
That's just far-fetched, in my opinion.
In Honduras, you know, living the life, I think maybe he was in Honduras, but I don't think he was, like... I think he was, like, low-key undercover, though. In Honduras. Yeah. Like, I don't think he was killed. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Like, I think he just...
He just lived there.
He just lived there, and he just was to himself. Probably had a family of his own. It's probably going to pop up soon.
In this account, Rogers fled to Guatemala.
So now he's in Guatemala?
No, this account, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, this is Guatemala and Honduras.
Well, look, if they thought that he was able to impersonate Harvey Lee Oswald, maybe, you know, he got someone to impersonate him over there in Honduras, but really he's in Guatemala living the life.
True, but what was the purpose of the impersonation?
I have no idea.
Is that maybe to make, fool
to make him look like Oswald was in Mexico, not at the in Dallas?
Probably. Trying to make it seem like you got the wrong guy, you know.
Yeah.
It's not me. It's just somebody that looks like me. I was in Mexico.
That might be far-fetched, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, if all this book is just fact-based, yeah.
Fact-based fiction.
Publishers Weekly reviewed the book, stating, the authors do a workmanlike job with their thesis, but the degree of poetic license in terms of reconstructed dialogue and attributed thought seems excessive here, and sourcing is virtually non-existent. Assassination Buffs, however, will welcome the book for its novelty value and its easy readability.
So they don't even believe it. Mm. Yeah. Is that what I'm understanding?
That's so right.
I think so.
Yeah, they're trying to say like some of the thought process is more like, well, like the whole Honduras, Guatemala. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't believe in that theory.
I don't believe in that theory.
I don't either.
I think he just went undercover, like, in hiding, like, because he's a smart guy, obviously. Yeah. So I think he
just fled.
Well, I mean, so
he could have gone anywhere.
Are they saying, like, that he was working for the CIA or he wasn't working for the CIA?
I think they're saying he was working with the CIA.
Oh, right, let's go with the thing that maybe he was working for the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what he the knew CIA how to disguise.
One was seismologists.
Well, you never know.
Get them oil.
Oil and that gold, buddy. That's a good question, though.
What's that?
Why would they want
a seismologist?
Yeah.
Right. Maybe from his naval intelligence.
Oh.
Past. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I still don't believe it.
Yeah, I think he just went into deep hiding.
Yeah, he just fled the country.
He was just able to hide. It's kind of like that man who killed his family back in the day. And for years, he went into hiding, right? Mm-hmm. And,
Wait, what man are you talking about?
I forgot his name, but he killed all of his family members. He made it seem like they were going to go on a trip and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He murdered them one by one, I think including his... I don't know if it's his mother or his mother-in-law. Oh. And he left their bodies in a wooded area, but I think he made it seem like they were burnt or something, I want to say.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
And for the longest time, he was missing because no one knew where he was at. And it turned out he was living a whole life with another family. Yeah. And I think they just caught him, like, I don't want to say recently, but, like, you know.
Where was this?
I need to go look it up and see what it is. Okay. But I think the year that it happened
it
was
local,
like... No, it wasn't local.
No.
All right, guys. Let's talk about the case and our theories on the case.
Yes.
Let's start with Bubs. What do you think?
I think he just snapped one day on Father's Day, killed him, and fled the country. That's my theory.
I go with Bubba. I think, maybe on Father's Day because, like, what they had said that maybe his dad was abusive.
Right, like
abuse, like there's a significance.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, like a symbolic kind of thing.
Yeah. So he just, I feel like he just snapped and he went to a rugged hiding.
How would you been?
I feel the same way.
Yep. Same thing.
So we're all in agreement?
Yeah.
That's weird. That's funny.
And then I'm going to end it with, but you know. Who knows? He's probably traveling the world or did travel around the world.
Like I said, he's 100 years old right now. That's all we have for this case today. Michael, take us into the closing.
Hope you all enjoyed this episode of the Four True Crime Idiots podcast. Please rate us on Apple Podcasts and please follow us, the Four True Crime Idiots podcast, on all of our social media platforms. All of the links will be in the description. Until the next episode,
stay vigilant.
Stay safe.
Beware of your surroundings.
Bye.
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 Take care.
Thank you for listening.